With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Luke's Massive Storytelling Podcast Thing. Whoa, yeah. Here we go. Check it out now. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to Luke's Massive Storytelling Podcast Thing. My name is Luke and this is my thing. How are you all doing? You're the massive listeners out there. Are you well? Are you keeping healthy and other pleasantries? So NaNoWriMo is done as of today. Nano completo, nano finito, nano done no. So Oscar, my cat, is with me again. Oscar, how do you think I did? You gonna congratulate me for finishing NaNoWriMo?
Nobody cares. I mean, meow.
Nice. Okay, so just because I put the first 1,000 words of my nano novel online, so if you do want to check it out, you don't have to, but it's there for you if you wanted to. Go to lukecondor.com/snippet. That's Condor with a K. You can read the first 1,000 words for free. Why not? Have a gander. Also, we started the Instagram page for Hawk and Cleaver, and that's been fun. We've been making a mess over there. Go check it out. Instagram.com/HawkandCleaver. We've been posting stuff that makes us laugh. It's been fun. Nothing too serious. Made up quotes and nonsense. There's a picture of Daredevil, and in quotation marks it says, "Pass the ketchup." Why not? You know. Why the hell not? So today, for you guys, it's Monday morning. What are you up to this week? What are you up to now? What is that smell? Well, are you commuting? Are you biking? Running, working? Are you swimming to work? I don't know. Okay, so today, talking comic books, crowdfunding, and campaigns. I'm talking to John Late, writer and creator of Brethren Born, which is a crowdfunded comic book project. Since then, he's formed his comic book publishing company, Level 8 Comics, and has joined forces with Close to Immortality, which is a collection of indie comic book companies who form together to battle evil or something. I imagine they're like the Megazord of indie comics, which is very cool. You know, watch out, Rita Repulsa, Lord Zedd, Goldar, any other Power Rangers references? Oh yeah, watch out, Putty Patrol. They were always terrible. You just give them a quick punch to the chest and they like exploded. Is that right? I can't remember. It was a long time ago. Anyway, so normally these interviews start with a hey and a what's up. But as soon as I got on the call with John, we got straight into it. So as we transition, we're at a point where me and John were just talking about his day job as a fireman. So cool. Okay, let's take a peek. So do the fire service people know that you make comics?
Yes, they do now. Yeah, I was on a night out just before I did the signing at the Worcester comic store.
Yeah,
it was one of the girls from HQ. It was her leave and do, so I'd gone out for the night with that lot. And a girl called Jess, who's like the media communications manager or something. That's her main title for the service. She said, "Oh, she said I saw on Facebook they're doing the signing." I said, yeah. I said, I'm doing a radio show in the morning and doing all this kind of thing. She says, "Oh, yeah, I'll put it in the bulletin," which is basically the newsletter for the entire fire service.
That's cool.
Well, Hereford and Worcester Fire Rescue. So I was like, "Oh, you have you? She said, yeah. I was like, "Okay, I don't know how that's going to go down." And then about, must be 2 weeks ago now, we had the chief fire officer over at Training Centre. I know him fairly well anyway. He said, You all right, John? I said, yeah. He said, good to see that you got something going on outside the fire service. He said, I didn't realise you like comics. I said, yeah, I'm a bit of a closet geek, mate. But, you know, it's something I've always wanted to do. And then he went, I can't remember what word he used now. It was something like, yeah, I'll never edge you down as a bit of a spod though, or something like that. Another word for geek. I don't know what it was now. I was like, okay, cheers, boss. Cheers, mate.
Yeah.
So yeah, pretty much everyone knows now. But it's been good because I've I've sold quite a few to some workmates, and quite a few of them have been really supportive. So
it's a shame that it didn't go out when you were doing the crowdfunding campaign, because I imagine that might have, you know, spurred it on a bit, or did this go out before that?
Well, I did ask one of the senior officers and said, you know, what's the crack? Because could I put something in the bulletin, or could I put something on the intranet for the fire service? And his face, immediately I knew what the answer was going to be. And I think because it's classed as making money. Than for charity or something like that. Yeah. I think it's a little bit, you know, everyone else could then think, oh, I'll start advertising my part-time business now. And I can see where it was coming from, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is art.
Exactly. Yeah. This is art, man. He's totally an alpha male. And he's like, wouldn't understand that sort of thing. Just into fire service, and he likes shooting things. So
yeah.
It's best I just don't go near him.
But like, I mean, everyone watches Marvel films and stuff now. Like, it feels like you can be a bit more open nowadays, don't you think?
Oh, definitely, yeah. All my close mates know, you know, I'm in comics and that sort of thing. They know I've been a geek for years. But you know, in the fire service, you only tell certain people.
Yeah, I'm actually the same at my work. I have to know someone quite well before I'm willing to let them in on my like ventures and stuff, and I like to keep that divide if I can.
I think as soon as you mention comics to someone, they just automatically form a sort of stereotypic image of you, like just sat in your bedroom where you're just in your pants reading comics, and it's like, nah,
that's only partly true.
Yeah. I do most of that.
Yeah.
There's
no pants involved.
Yeah. Darling, I'm ready. People just form an opinion of you straight away. You know, and, you know, I still get people coming up and saying, oh, how's your cartoons going? I just go, yeah, it's going good. It's going good. You just know they don't get it. I try to educate people, but still, there's a vast majority of people just go, well, you're right, you're just right in the beano, aren't you?
I really wanted to get you on. Thanks for taking the time to do it. Basically, you've done what me and a couple of the guys want to do next year: do the whole crowdfunding thing, get a comic book out there and done. And not only you've done it, like, it looks really good. Like Reverend Bond looks like a really cool little comic book.
Cheers, mate.
So maybe you could start off by giving us a bit of background about, like, you know, how you got into writing comics, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, sure. Getting into comics, I've always enjoyed comics. I started collecting around about 15, 16, really liked Uncanny X-Men, picked up a few little deals, and I thought, right, yeah, you know, I'm just going to start collecting X-Men. But then you find a few more sort of like titles that you really enjoy. And I started, you know, collecting when Image first started going on. So I was collecting things like, really like Prophet. I don't know whether you ever saw Prophet by Stephen Platt did a variant cover, which I absolutely loved.
I think I've got the first trade paperback of Prophet.
Yeah, really, really enjoyed that. Obviously, it's got the religious undertones to it and all that sort of stuff. And I'm totally... I know this might put a few people off, but I'm like quite an aggressive atheist, and it's like, but I find religion really interesting. So that was a good one to go at, and then just sort of like did it through sort of my late teens into the 20s. I did a bit of travelling around about that sort of time, so the collecting sort of like fell off a little bit then. So yeah, that was sort of like where my love of comics came from.
Have you still got all those comic books that you collected, or have you had to?
The vast majority of them, I've still got packed away upstairs. I've got rid of a few in the past, whether it's giving them away to people I know or selling them. I've kept the majority of them. So it's nice to. I was only looking at them yesterday. So it's nice to have a quick flick through and think, oh, blimey, I remember that story. Or,
yeah.
Wow, how much that comic's changed since, you know, since it first came out. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a journey to where I am now.
Was there any one of those comics that you can think of that made you think, oh, this, I would like to do something like this?
Probably. I probably started thinking of really getting a comic written was when I was picking up some of Mark Miller's stuff.
Yeah.
In some of his titles, I've only just sort of like read. I only read American Jesus for the first time this week. Obviously, he's released the Miller World Anthology competition submissions. I don't know whether you've seen that.
I have. Are you going to enter it?
Yeah, I've entered it. I've put my submission in last week, yeah. And I've gone for the Kingsman story.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
But I was reading it, and obviously it's for mature readers, and you know, when you read Kick-Ass or Hit Girl or Nemesis, you know, you realize straight away it's not for children. It's a mature reader book. And I was reading one of those and thought, oh, you know, I reckon I could do something like this. I'd started writing a book about 5 years ago, but then my two girls came along, and you just don't have the time to really put pen to paper for any sort of novel.
Yeah.
So I'd done about five or six chapters of that and just ran out of time to be able to do it. So, it was probably picking up the Mark Miller books, really, that made me really think, actually, this guy's onto something here and proving very popular. I think it was probably about 12 months before the actual Kick-Ass movie came out. So
he's quite pro indie, right?
Oh, yeah.
It seems that way anyway.
Yeah, I was looking. I went to a signing he did in Birmingham this year and had a 2 or 3 minute chat with him. And he was just really, really positive, really nice guy. Sat down, showed him a couple of pages of Brethren Born. And he's like, oh, you know, that's fantastic. You know, make sure you send it up to me. And I'm sure he says that to all the people who come and see him at these sort of conventions and signings. But he was really positive. He was really cool.
Yeah. So tell us about Brethren Born then. So like, was this the novel that you were writing before, or was that a completely different story?
No. As I've started a little comic called Away. That's based on that, but I'll tell you about that in a little bit. But Brethren Born, yeah, it was something I probably came up with just over 2 years ago. And when I started thinking of it, I thought, you know, I need a really nice title. And for probably a week, I was trying to come up with a decent, catchy title. And then, you know, with some of the themes that are actually in the comic, I came up with Brethren Born. And again, it's got those sort of like religious undertones to it as well. Because if you Google Brethren,
yeah.
Put that into any search engine, it comes up with lots of religious quotes, religious texts. There's lots of American churches that use Brethren in their titles and in their sort of promo literature. And that really interested me because, as I said, you know, I find religion fascinating, although I don't believe in any sort of deities or anything like that. It really just fascinates me. And then coming up with the Brethren Born, you know, it works really well. And a lot of people have said that to me, that they really like the title and it makes them want to know more. They don't even know it's a comic. And they go, oh, what's all of that about?
Yeah, and you've got a cool little tagline as well with the Who is Newton?
The guy who did the titles for me, a guy called Graham Cartwright.
Yeah.
He runs a company called Geeky Creative. And I sent him a few things, said, you know, what do you think of this? And then sent it off, and Phil Nibbs did something really nice for the t-shirts as well, and came up with Who is Newton. And it worked really well with the way Newton's got these things in his palms, and that's like the dot of the question mark.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I really like it.
So, yeah, it worked out really nice. So the story is, I don't think I've sort of been influenced by any particular book. His powers and his abilities have probably come from being... you know, a big fan of the Matrix world, some of the comics and graphics and some of the sort of computer games I've played. I've sort of come from that really, and sort of trying to develop what those have tried to do in the past.
Yeah.
And then just working through the story.
Cool. So you had this idea of the story, and you knew you wanted to get something made. What was the first step in thinking, I've got the start point and I know where I want to end? Like, I want to have a physical comic book. What was the next step there?
what I did really was write it down as a story, and I shouldn't have done that really. I should have done a little bit more research into working out what a comic script is actually like. So I wrote it in a story format really, almost in chapters.
Yeah.
And it was probably very close to the end of the first draft that I thought, right, I'll tell you what, I need to find out how to write a comic. And I Googled it and I went, oh, bollocks. It's totally different to the way I've written it. This is like, although it wasn't hours and hours and hours down the drain, it was, right, I've got to put a lot more work to this. I pulled up a few examples like from Dark Horse and Image. There's loads of different references out there, and there's lots of different websites where you can get example scripts.
Yeah,
and there's a basic layout which I found, but there's never two scripts the same. People use different terminology. Only slight differences really, but just in this last 12 months, I've seen so many different versions, and some of the groups I'm with, like the guys from Close to Immortality, they all write them in slightly different ways. We've sort of been swapping scripts recently just to see how each of us do it. And, you know, even down to the different fonts, to the different size of the fonts, how they put the dialogue, how they put the action scenes. It's all similar, but different, if you know what I mean.
I was, so when I started to look into how to script a comic book, I downloaded one of Brian K. Vaughan's, I think it was like a Why the Last Man script.
Yeah.
And I was surprised at how loose it was in terms of the way. So in a film script, they're so precise about how they want things to be worded, and you can't have things a certain way. But in a comic book script, it all seemed to be quite chatty and quite loose and quite free. Is that what you found?
Yeah, definitely. You can go, you know, Brian Vaughan, you know, I'm real big fan of his.
Yeah.
Mark Miller, you know, sometimes if you read the sample script he put in for Hook, that he's just obviously just released, for the anthology, very, very sort of like loose, and lets the artist do what they want, really. It's very much like the Marvel way of doing things. Yeah. Marvel have always been, you know, Stan Lee was very famous for just saying, right, Spider-Man swinging through the streets, he bumps into the Hobgoblin, has a fight scene. And that was basically it, really. And then he just let the artist get on with it. And really, the artist wrote it. The artist wrote most of the dialogue. He then put his little bits and bobs in and changed a few things. But and then sort of like not claim it as his own. That sounds really bad. But, you know, he did a lot of that. Whereas a lot of the DC version of writing scripts was very was a lot more the way that I've done it. And the fact that you write it down what you want the artist to do, and give them as much information as possible.
And in terms of like, how strict are you to the artist in keeping in with that script?
I've been quite strict the first time because I didn't know Phil.
Yeah.
So when I was writing my script, I didn't have an artist. So because I didn't have that rapport with someone, or they didn't know the way I was thinking, or I couldn't sit down and have a face to face chat with someone, I thought, right, I've got to write it the DC way. And Phil's very much up for that. You know, he just says, right, you write down whatever you want me to put. And that's pretty much what he did for Brethren Born. He changed a few bits and bobs because I've never written a comic before. He's never drawn one before. And he said, well, he's into graphic design. He's a compositor. Is that the right terminology for a compositor?
I don't know.
He's in graphic design. Okay. He's brilliant at what he does. And he said, no, I think this will work better if we have it more of a sequence of smaller panels rather than two big panels. So he did have a bit of a swap and a change.
Yeah. It's finding an artist as well. Like, we had nowhere to start on it. I messaged you start this week, and you gave me a couple of places to put like a notice out. I put them out, and then within two last couple of days, I've had like probably about 30 or 40 different people email me or something.
That's brilliant.
It is cool, but there's so much, and like we're looking for a specific style, so it's about finding like the right sort of art style for the project. But like, does Phil Nibbs? How did you find Phil, by the way?
I used to work with his brother. I used to work down in Oxfordshire, and his brother used to be on the same watch as me. I was his boss, and we were having a chat on Facebook, and I'd put something on Facebook, and it came up on my timeline the other day.
Yeah.
I think it was something like November the 14th or something like that, saying, does anybody know any artists who might want to write a comic, draw a comic for me? And that's how I met Phil. Dan sent me a message saying my brother does something. I got in contact with Phil and just said, listen, mate, send me some stuff. If you've got a portfolio, that'd be amazing. And was just, you know, some of his work was just absolutely brilliant. Really,
so was Phil the first guy you sort of looked into?
I was in contact with a couple of other guys. And another guy who's very local to me, a guy called Luke Priest, who's a brilliant artist, really, really good. He did all the artwork for, I can't remember what the game was now. It's like a zombie army game that came out this year. I can't think of what it's called now. But really, really good guy. But I was one of those horrible bastard writers who wanted somebody to do something for free.
Yeah.
Which is almost, you know, it's almost sort of like swearing and dropping the C-bomb if you ask an artist to do something for free, which I found out very early on and only upset one or two people on a couple of Facebook groups. It was something I learned really quickly. It's quite rare to find someone who will do something for free, but had a good chat with Phil. It was the first, he's a big comic fan as well. He's got a big collection at his house as well. So he was like, right, yeah, I just want the opportunity to draw something.
Perfect. That's pretty amazing. And is his style sort of in keeping with what you had in mind?
It was. I've really started reading a bit more of The Walking Dead over the last sort of like 12 months.
Yeah.
And his first, his portfolio, he had about 8 or 10 pictures in there that he'd done for family and friends and a couple of like small commissions, and very reminiscent of early Walking Dead stuff. And that was just what I wanted, you know, not photorealistic pictures, but reasonably comic art, but with, you know, a fairly serious subject, you know, with Brethren Born being, you know, there's some not gruesome scenes, but some pretty harsh things that happen in issue one. You couldn't have it too cartoony or that real sort of like unrealistic comic style, but not too realistic, so it would put people off.
Yeah, no, it looks like you found the right balance, because the art does add to the tone like quite a lot, and from what I've seen, it seems like the balance is spot on for that sort of genre, I guess you call it.
Yeah, and the feedback we've had and the reviews of all of them have sort of really, really praised Phil's art. You know, that you it's quite distinctive. I think if you got a range of books, you know, one day we'll have, you know, a range of books with Phil drawing on them, whether he's writing for me or writing for someone else. I think he's one of those artists you can say, oh, right, yeah, that's Phil Nibbs. That's definitely his work. He's got that distinctive ability to draw. You know, I'm so jealous. I can't bloody draw a bloody stick man. But watching him draw is just amazing. When we was at MCM in London, I was watching him draw a character from out of issue 2. And it just appears on the page from there. It's just a couple of lines, and then all of a sudden, shit, there's a really amazing piece of work. Where did that come from? I'm so jealous of you. Leave me alone now. I need to get over it for 4 minutes. But yeah, he's a really quiet guy, but really, really nice, really nice bloke. And he's been an absolute pleasure to work with.
Was there a reason you crowdfunded rather than, you know, did the whole pitching thing to Image or someone like that?
Again, I did a lot of research before. I'd heard crowdfunding on the news, and you see a few things online, but never really known anybody who was doing it, or I'd never backed anything myself. So I just did a bit of research, looked at Kickstarter, Indiegogo, GoFundMe, all these types of crowdfunding, and just really like Kickstarter, like the look of it. Obviously, it's an American company. But just researching all the other comic funds that were on there at the time, whether they were successful or unsuccessful, I just thought, right, yeah, that's a really nice format. Started off one of the projects just to see how it worked. You know, you can start a project and end a project whenever you want, really.
Yeah.
Never have to publish it. And it just seemed a really nice format and a platform to use. So, yeah, I went with Kickstarter.
How did you work out how much you needed? Because this is something we're trying to do at the minute. I've no idea how much to ask for, and I'm a bit worried Kickstarter, because if you don't make your target, you don't get the money, right?
That's it with Indiegogo. I think there's an option for you to say, right, I might not make the funding, but I keep what you give me, which is can obviously got its own advantages. But I found that speaking to people who were potential backers or maybe not even backers, if I said, look, you could put as much money towards it as you want. If we don't make it, you don't spend any money. You get all your money back, and well, you don't have any money taken out of your bank to begin with.
Yeah.
And that was, people were like, oh, okay, that sounds like a deal. So for me, it makes me want to try even harder, because if I don't get it, it's like Dragon's Den, all or nothing.
Yeah, definitely. So, burn your ships and all that.
Exactly, yeah. So figuring out a price, I just did a lot of research, really working out how much art prints were going to cost, the how much the printing was going to cost. I was looking at just a print run of 250 to begin with, because I thought, you know, I don't want to sort of like go mental and have a loft full or a garage full of comics that I don't sell. And then went to a print run of 500. So got a couple of quotes from a couple of companies, found out what that would cost, then estimated what the packaging would be, what the postage would be, and just rounded up rather than round down, say, oh, and I'll be a bit more conservative. I just probably went a bit mental and just rounded up and just figured out that £2,200 would be just over £2,000, a really big figure. You know, £2,000 is not to be sniffed at. Then just a little bit more just to make sure I'd got enough to be able to hit everything. And again, just did loads of research. I spoke to a couple of people who'd successfully funded. So went through a lot of, I just looked at UK comics, looked at people who'd done it successfully and contacted them and had little chats with them. Because once you're a member on Kickstarter, you can contact any of the people who've created. And got in a conversation with a guy called Jeremy Biggs, who's done, you may have hit Metal Gear, not Metal Gear Solid. He'll kick my head in for that. Metal Made Flesh. He's got issue 2 funding at the minute, and they're around about the 13,000 mark. They're absolutely smashed it. I think they'd gone for a £6,000 target, and they're on about £12,000 or £13,000 now, so they've absolutely smashed it.
They've doubled it, and that's what you did, because you.
It was just over. It was something like £5,176. So we got 235% funded in the end.
I mean, it seems like a lot of. Well, maybe I'm just no talented people, but a lot of people I know who've done it, the comic books in particular, have like doubled their targets or. Made a lot more than they thought they were going to need, and it just seems like a really high success rate.
It's amazing. I think the success rate for all of any Kickstarter fund is something like 47%. But all the ones that I've seen have failed either just haven't got a very good Kickstarter funding page, they haven't done the research, they haven't done a very good video, they haven't really sort of like put down what they're trying to achieve, and they haven't made it personal. One of the big tips I was given right at the very start was make it personal. Be in the video yourself. Show them how passionate you are about it and what you want to do and what they'll get and what you'll do to look after them. You know, it's not just during the fun, but how much you'll look after them afterwards and what deals you'll do in the future. And it definitely worked out for me. You know, it was an amazing feeling to hit the target. You know, we did it in less than 18 hours as well, the actual target, which was just...
Were you nervous when you first, you know, hit publish on the campaign?
Oh, shit myself. We were doing it. We were doing London MCM. And I'd purposely timed the launch for the first day of London MCM at 12 o'clock on the Friday. So made it a bit of a thing, you know, when people coming up were saying, yeah, make sure you get here for 12 o'clock and I'm going to be pressing the publish button and, you know... I didn't have a crowd, let's just say. There wasn't a crowd of people. I go, countdown, turn, 9. There was about 3 people and a Pokemon. 2 dressed up as, whatchamacallit, the little yellow thing out of Pokemon. I can't think it was called now.
Pikachu.
Yeah. A giant Pikachu was stood next to me and went for it. And then you just sit there looking at the iPad screen going, come on then.
Yeah.
It did. And to be honest, in the next... 20, 30 minutes, people started funding because I'd done the promotion. I told people and it was going on. And, you know, I think we were up to about £500 within the first half an hour. And I was like, no way. This is mental. Absolutely mental.
So when you funded like 18 hours in, what time did you find out the morning after then, or?
Yeah, well, I had a fairly late night on the Friday. Went out for a curry with them, my brother-in-law.
Is that at the Excel Centre? Were you?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I live literally just around the corner from the Excel Centre.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
He lives near Broccoli.
Yeah, yeah.
Just down the road from Broccoli, there's a tube station. I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, I was stopping the night with him. So we went for a curry and a couple of beers. Because we're about £1,900 at the end of the night. We got back to his flat around about midnight, and it was about £1,900. So I was like, oh, we're going to do it this weekend. You know, we're absolutely amazing, absolutely buzzing. And I woke up about 4 or 5 in the morning, couldn't sleep, thinking, oh, I wonder what it's out. And
yeah,
looked at my phone and clicked on email messages. I got a few in, and it said, congratulations, you're funded. So obviously straight away, blown away. Went onto the actual Kickstarter page, and we were just over £3,000.
And did you have it up for the month?
Yes, 30 days. 30 days I went for.
That's crazy. So were people like funding you continuously after that for the rest of the month?
I would, yeah. Well, we got to just over £3,000 within, it was about 18 hours, yeah. I'm sure it's 18 hours. And then obviously it slows down. You know, I think I'd worked out if we carried on being funded at that rate, we'd have got about 90 grand. It was a brilliant, brilliant 24 hours. Yeah. But like with every Kickstarter fund you look at, it does slow down. It does slow down in the middle. It tends to be that the graph, it tends to be a bit of a smiley face. Really lots of pledges at the start, then it dies off in the middle. And then near the end, when you're ending the last few days, it tends to pick up a little bit because people can either see it's funded or very close to being funded. Stretch awards are being reached, stretch goals are being reached. So people say, okay, right, that'll be a good deal to go on to now.
Yeah. It sounds amazing. I mean, it sounds scary, but...
It is because you're racked with feelings of, nah, it's not gonna get funded. I'm not going to get the money.
Potential failure as well, where you have to tell people we didn't make it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Jeremy, who's got the Metal Made Flesh, they launched for issue two probably about 3 months ago, maybe two, three months ago, and they were unsuccessful. They ended it early because they knew they weren't going to make it. They'd set a really high target. It was something. It was it was about 15,000, maybe £20,000. Their target was. Because they'd had such a successful campaign for the first one. But they did a bit of work, came back with a figure of 6,000, restarted the campaign, and they've absolutely smashed it. They've doubled it, and they're getting a fantastic amount of money.
And they might sounds like they might be on their way to getting what they asked for originally.
Exactly. And I think it might end this weekend, actually. But what, you know... You'd think it'd be the other way around, that you hit this, you set a really high target. No, you set a target that's literally a quarter of what your original target was, and you smash it to pieces. So there's various different tactics. So what is your book then? Is it an anthology, or is it a standalone book?
We might just be doing the first issue, I guess, but we wanted to do all four issues of like a first arc, but it might be a bit expensive, so we don't know yet. But it's going to be like a bit of like a bit of a thriller sort of comic. But we're still working on it at the minute.
Are you writing, or you draw, or what element do you do?
Well, this particular one, because there's three of us in our little story studio, we call it. This particular one is going to be written by one of the other guys, and I'm going to be in charge of the campaign itself, trying to push that. And then next time I might write the next series, or the other guy might write the next one. We're just going to take it in turns and see how it goes, really.
It's definitely good to have a team of people doing it. I work full-time and Phil works full-time, and it did eat into so much of every single day this year. My wife was going nuts. She was going, right, that's it. You're not doing another one after this.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, don't worry. It won't happen again. And then I'm literally writing, doing another campaign page for issue two.
Not just that, but Level 8. Level 8 is your company, your imprint name, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. And that's not just going to be Brethren Born. Are you looking to do more titles of that?
Yeah. Obviously, Brethren Born's the flagship title. Yeah. And that's sort of like the main promo for it at the minute. But I've written probably the first half of a new comic. I think it's going to be a two-parter called Away. And I've got an amazing artist called Grant Richards who's going to be drawing that. Very traditional artist. If you look him up on Facebook, he's Grant Richards. Or if you look him on Twitter, he's G-Artist, at G-Artist. And I met him in Birmingham in September at the Comics Uncovered convention.
Yeah.
And he's walking around with this huge, I don't know what size it is, but he'd done this original piece of art. And it's Judge Dredd versus Marv from Sin City.
Yeah.
And it is unbelievable.
I know. I think I saw that on your. Maybe you put it on Facebook or something.
Yes.
Or...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've sort of started promoting him. He's just what an amazing talent, and got chatting to him, and he's a great big bloke. I'm 6'4". He's probably about 6'5", and he's big dude. He's got a bald head. He's wearing a biker jacket. You know, you look at him, you'd cheat your pants. But one of the nicest guys you could possibly ever imagine to meet.
Yeah.
And then probably about 3 weeks after that, I said, look, I've got a story I've written. Do you fancy doing some writing? What do you charge per page? And he said, I'll tell you what, let me draw you a few pages and we'll see where we go from there. He's got the script. He's doing the first 7 pages, and then we might pitch that at a couple of publishers.
Yeah, that sounds good. What's the plan for Level 8 in general?
I started Level 8 up really as a base to put the funds from the Kickstarter, really, because as we were getting to close to £5,000 with Kickstarter, once you've successfully funded it, it takes around about 2 to 3 weeks for the money to land in your account.
Yeah.
They take their share of it. And then whatever account you've given them, they ship the money straight to it. That was going to go straight into my personal account. And I thought, right, that's not my money. That's the money for the comic.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, I'm going to set up a small sole trader company called Level 8 Comics, put it in there. So when it comes to paying taxes and all that sort of stuff, it's all there, and I can show that there's no earnings. It's all just purely going towards the comic.
And we need to do something like that, because I haven't even thought about tax and stuff like that yet.
It's one of those things. I know it's not a massive amount of money. We're not paying ourselves. It's all purely going towards publishing the comic. But if the taxman sees that amount of money goes into your bank account and thinks, wait a minute, whose is that? Right, I'm having, I don't know what the base rate is. Is it 25% or
something like that? Yeah.
Quarter of your funding gone because you've put it somewhere where it shouldn't be, really. So that's where I started off with, and then decided to maybe start doing it a little bit more with the actual website.
So you did 250 comics on the first run, is that right?
No, I bumped it up to 500.
Okay. Is that because you got to the 5,000 mark?
No, it was. I'd said, right, I'm going to do 500 because the more you get printed, the cheaper it is. Sounds weird. Obviously, per unit, it becomes a lot cheaper. Depending on what quality you're going for and who your printer is, some of them might say, right, yeah, you can have 250, but it's going to cost you about £4 per unit. And, you know, you're just pricing yourself out then.
Yeah.
You're just going to take away from everything that you've funded for. So I went for 500, so it just worked out nicely. And I went for 125 of those as variant editions, so it adds a little bit more to the price.
Yeah, but then do you charge a little bit more for the variants? Or...
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. That makes sense, yeah.
For the original cover, which is, so we've got 375 of those. It's £4 for the original. And £6 for the variant, because there's only 125 of those.
Yeah.
And they're nearly all gone. They've proved really popular. They're nearly all gone. I've only got about 35 of those left. And I imagine I'm going to sell out of those this weekend at MCM.
Keep a couple. Collector's editions.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, then. I'll put a couple to the side for you.
So in terms of like ongoing sales and ongoing marketing and that sort of thing, are you going to conventions and focusing there, or what's your plan there?
It's a funny one at the minute. I was at Nottingham a couple of weeks back and it went really well.
Yeah.
And it was reasonably small, quieter convention, but you know, we sold just under 50 books there. which was amazing. I thought we'd probably maybe sell 15 or 20.
Yeah.
We sold just under 50, as well as a few art prints and one or two original art pieces. We're at Birmingham MCM all weekend this weekend, Saturday, Sunday. That's the last one this year.
Yeah.
And depending on where we're at and how many we sell at this weekend, I may have to do a reprint for, because I'm at True Believers in Cheltenham, which is in February. Then I'm at London Super Comic Con with Close to Immortality guys. We're all going down there for our official.
I was going to come down to that, I think, and say hello.
Cool. Obviously, that's at Excel as well. So yeah, make sure. That'll be really good, because there'll be six or seven of us all there behind the tables. We've got a really good pitch right next to the 2000 AD guys and the Diamond Stall as well. So that should be really good fun.
Yeah. Are you looking at doing any digital marketing, like Facebook ads or anything like that, or have you not gone into that yet?
I've not really got into it too much yet. I just want to see how many I've got left, because I don't want to sort of like really start heavily promoting then when people start ordering.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
A few online through PayPal and things like that, through the website. But if I come back at the weekend and I've only got 10 books available, I just don't want to say to people, although it might sound really good, oh yeah, totally sold out, it's gonna it's been an amazing success and all that, but I'd much rather be able to say to people, yeah, okay, we've sold out, the next one's going to be out in February.
And
just because I just don't want to come across all Billy Big Bollocks. I'm a total noob at this. It's been an amazing experience, I'd love to do more, but I am an absolute total rank amateur at the minute, and I don't want to blow my beans too early.
Yeah. What about digital like copies of the comic? Are you selling any of those, or are you just sticking to physical?
Mostly just physical. I've had a look at things like Drive Through Comics and Comixy and Comixology.
Yeah.
I've given out PDF versions for all the backers. That was all part of the reward. And so I've opened up a Dropbox for all those people to go in and have a look at the high res version, because it's around about 100 megabytes, so you can't send it by email.
Yeah.
I've sent everyone a low res version, but a couple of people who are into IT, you probably give me a slating for it. They said the low res version doesn't do it justice. So I've opened up a Dropbox for those guys who are tech savvy. Not many people know what Dropbox is. I have thought about it. From the people I know in the comic world, it's not a money making scheme, especially when it's your first comic and not many people are going to buy it. A lot of people put them on for free. I suppose I could do that just to get the name out, but I'm just sort of like waiting a little bit, see what's going on, see what happens with issue two.
Yeah, it's still early days though, isn't it? So
of course, yeah. The big difference with issue two is I've got a lot more. I've got several more artists on board to help with getting out as quick as possible.
Yeah.
Phil did everything on the first issue, from pencils, inks, colours, and lettering.
Sounds amazing that you found Phil, because like he is obviously a great artist. He did it all. He was the style that you were looking for. So I mean, just well done on finding that gem.
I know it was pure luck. Pure luck, but I've always been someone say, right, you make your own luck. I could have just sat there, not done anything, and not put anything on Facebook, and then just let it go, and then think, oh, I've got time to do that. But I found him, and he's brilliant. He's really good. He gave me a lot of the original art when I went down to see him last month to get a few bits and bobs signed. And this big wadge of A4 sheets, just full of scribbles and full of storyboards and sketches. You're like, wow, just didn't think you put that much work into it. I knew he was busy, but it really sort of opened my eyes to how busy he's been.
Yeah. Is he going to do more for anyone else? You know, is he going to take on more comic work?
I've been speaking to a few guys on Twitter, and I've had a few meetings with a few of the guys, and one guy's asked if he's available to do some sort of movie storyboarding and things like that, which he's up for. It's only local stuff, so he may get a little. Well, it will be paid work for him, but it all depends on what he's got a young family as well. So he said he'd be up for it, but you know, I've said to him, you know, if I absolutely stink at writing and it provides a springboard for him to sort of like move his career on, I said that would be absolutely amazing for him as well. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens with Phil.
So what question should I have asked you about, like, the process that you've been through that I haven't? Like, is there anything that I've missed?
I don't think so. Obviously, with Kickstarter, there's the you've just got to manage it well. I think you've got to keep on it. You can't just start it and then leave it and then come back to it 30 days. You've got to manage it. You've got to speak to people. You've got to update. You've got to make sure you give them updates. Set realistic stretch goals. Stretch goals that people would want.
Yeah.
To make them think, oh, actually, oh, that's a good idea. Where a t-shirt comes with it now, or a bookmark, or a badge, or it's knowing what the vast majority of people who like comics will like.
Yeah.
Research as much as possible for the Kickstarter. That's my biggest advice. And make a nice, no longer than 2 minute video.
Cool. Come on. So I've only got a couple more questions. Okay. Thanks again for, you know, spending the time. I appreciate it. You've got a family and that, and I'm guessing you've probably got TV programs you want to watch, or I don't know. But so what is your favorite story that isn't a comic? So like a film or a game or something like that?
I've just bought Fallout 4.
Oh, it looks good. It looks really good.
Really enjoying that at the minute. I just love it. They've really made it into it's not just a game. It's not just an action game. It's a movie, really. You're playing in a movie, and when I see online all the people looking for cheat codes and trying to get, you know, unlimited money and unlimited ammo, and I think, well, you just paid like 40, 50 quid for a game. Why do you want to finish it as early as possible? Why do you want to cheat? I don't get it. So yeah, love Fallout 4. I think that's great at the moment. Really big into my books. I love anything by Ian Banks. I think, you know, I don't know whether you've read any of his, but he's writing as a sci-fi author when he writes as Ian M. Banks. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Joe Abercrombie, brilliant author. So like does fantasy, but not Lord of the Rings type fantasy, quite sort of like funny and brutal and sort of like modern fantasy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I love reading. I don't get to play on the Xbox as much as I'd like to, but it's just late nights. And with two kids, you're late nights kill you these days.
Yeah, yeah. What time do you normally get up in the morning? Is that a random question?
Blimey, normally comes at about 6:30.
Okay, cool. Cool. So last question I've got here is just where can we keep up with you and your work and what you're doing?
Okay. You can, the Level 8 website, that's www.level8comics.com.
Yeah.
I'm attempts to keep that up to date as much as possible. I'll probably update it once every 2 weeks. There's the Facebook page. There's the Level 8 Comics page. There's also the Brethren Born page, which is obviously dedicated to Brethren Born. I share quite a few of the guys from the other groups work on there, but it's mostly Brethren Born. Twitter is at Level 8 Comics and at Brethren Born. And it's the Twitter accounts, obviously the ones on the phone. So I tend to keep up to date on those pretty much daily. And yeah, that's pretty much it really on online and social media.
I've just remembered, I completely forgot to ask you about Close to Immortality.
Okay.
Have you got time just to quickly?
Yeah. It's a really exciting thing that's happening at the moment. We as a group, we're talking almost every day really. I met Phil Woodward at ICE in Birmingham in September. I was there as a punter stroke. I was doing a report for Down the Tubes. I don't know whether you go on Down the Tubes, run by a guy called John Freeman, who used to be editor of UK Marvel, Marvel UK, 2000 AD. He's worked for a lot of the big comics.
Yeah.
Really good guy. He's still doing stuff now. So I was doing a couple of articles for him. Which were published, which was a really nice experience. Anyway, I met up with Phil, obviously really enthused about comics and the indie press scene. And, you know, he told me to go and have a chat with a couple of guys called Chris Sides and Chris Travell. They're from Redshift Press Went to have a little chat with them and just chatting on just as normal. And then the week after that, Phil sent me a message saying, got a suggestion for you. Let me know what you think. And basically they invited me to join Close to Immortality, which was lovely. I was a bit worried to begin with because I thought, wait a minute, I'm a total newbie. These guys have been doing it for 3, 4, 5 years. I think Phil's been doing it for 6 or 7 years. And I was thinking, what am I going to bring to the table? What can I do for these guys? It's going to be a total one-way traffic for me getting stuff from them. But I think it's just to do with attitude, really, rather than experience and enthusiasm for small press.
So what sort of thing do you do? Is it like a mastermind group, I guess? Or
we've termed it as a collective, really. We're a collective of individual creators who are almost staying as individuals, but all coming under one brand, which really promotes strength in numbers. So we'll be promoting on social media, when we go to conventions, whenever one of us does a Kickstarter fund or anything like that, we just put the power of a collective behind it, just so the support and the promotion's out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds awesome.
It's brilliant. Really looking forward to it.
And I'll... So the London Comic Con, that's February, is that right? Or
yeah, February 21st, 22nd, something like that.
Yeah, so I'll see all you guys down there anyway. I definitely want to come and say hello and meet you in person.
Yeah, come on. We're officially launching that weekend, the actual brand. So we're getting T-shirts made, banners made, everything all together. I'm obviously selling all our own individual comics, but you know, it just makes a total makes sense. Instead of having dotted all around the place,
yeah,
we're all there together supporting each other and make sure the message gets out there.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds really good, man. Cool. Okay, well, again, thanks for doing it. Have you got anything else you want to let people know about? Or
No, I think that's it, to be honest, mate. It's just, you know, Close to Immortality comes out in February, official launch then. I'm looking at doing another Kickstarter fund for Brethren Born issue 2. That's in the process, whether to release it before Christmas or after Christmas. That's a big decision to make because people have got no money. And then just working on a few other bits, waiting for a phone call from Millworld to say that I've been successful and got in the annual. That would be amazing. But yeah, just busy writing bits and bobs. But I'll make sure everyone knows about it on the websites and Facebook, etc.
Brilliant. All right, man. Yeah, so thanks so much.
Cheers, Luke. Cheers, mate.
I like John. And I think you can't not like John. What's not to like? He's so down to earth. And he used the term Billy Big Bollocks, which I thought was really cool. Yeah, so do us a favour. Go check the show notes and there should be links to all of John's work, so you can go check out Brethren Born and Level 8 Comics. Other than that, you know, I hope you're well. What are you working on? I really want to know. Let's get in touch. But I'm going to get back to it, get back to the day job. Yeah, alright guys, I'll leave it at that. I'll speak to you soon. Alright, wave goodbye, Oscar. He's not waving. In fact, I think he's given us the finger. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.